Okay, and we're on. Welcome to the Andersteegen podcast. It is the 15th of November, and this is episode 21 with myself, Martin, and
me, Imogen.
This week, we're going to respond to a question. Thank you for asking the question.
It's on the End of Seeking podcast Substack. There's the ability to put a question in the chat
or comment or whatever. Yeah. But someone left a comment, and a question. So great. Yep.
So they said, "Hi Martin, hi Imogen. I always love it when you talk in these episodes about your relationship to each other. There are not that many examples of truly awake, equal, loving, and healthy relationships. So that inspires me a lot. I'd love if you could talk more about that or about relationships in general, whatever comes up."
Whatever comes up, that's the thing. So thanks for the question. And, you know, we've been talking about relationships, yeah, and you know, being together, two people living an awakened life. But what does that look like? I mean, that's a really interesting query, and
I'm not many people willing to go on the record with that kind of exploration. You know, there's obviously plenty of people in relationships living those relationships through awakening and beyond, and willing to do it publicly. Or semi-publicly, at least, is, I think, the position maybe we find ourselves in, and there's not that many. I was trying to name a few just before we started this.
Sort of spiritual teachers that are...
Yeah, like people like Ajahshanti and his wife Mukti.
Right.
Amodamar and her partner, I can't remember his name, Kiva or something like that.
Right.
And I'm sure there's many more out there, but not that many.
The one
that
comes to mind is Gangaji, and I know she was, I don't know if she still is, but she was, her and Eli Jackson Bear are both non-dual teachers.
Yeah, so it sort of presents a unique viewpoint, not unique entirely,
I say teachers though. I mean, the main thing here actually is the awakening. It's like, what does it look like for people to be in relation and marriage and partnered, whatever, from that awakened place?
Yeah.
Because of the impersonal nature of the depth of that, but also living through the impersonal, living through the personal.
Absolutely.
In relation.
Yeah. And for me, it feels like such a big topic. You know, there's certain topics that feel so big that you don't know where to begin with them.
Well, let me just pop in with something and name that the awakened part of this is in the past sort of, 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
But before that, there was two people.
Yes.
In a marriage or coming together. And that, figuring out what that looks like. First of all, to be in what Cynthia Bergeau talks about, she calls it conscious relating, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of that conscious relating.
Yes.
So, awake or not awake, it's what's the power of conscious relating?
A huge amount in that.
Yeah.
To explore.
And I'll mention something that was important for me, and we've talked about this on the podcast. I think was that early on when we first did get together, I was so devoted, let's say, at that time too. Enlightenment, as mm-hmm. such, awakening, that I believed that that being in a relationship, partnership, you know, girlfriend, wife, as it turns out, I thought that was a mutually exclusive, I couldn't seek and achieve and attain, whatever you want to look at it, awakening and enlightenment, if I was in a relationship.
Yeah, that relationship itself would inhibit.
Exactly.
And that's not to say that can be the case, that if you're on a spiritual path, that certain relationships can actually inhibit that.
Definitely. Yeah. Good point.
But not necessarily. And I think that's the point that you're making there, is that you thought it was a binary.
There's no chance.
Yeah, exactly.
That what enlightenment looked like is a monk or a solo practitioner in a cave somewhere. You know, that's the myth. Yeah. Okay, that is the sort of the archetype, right? Of the true archetypal seeker after enlightenment.
In certain traditions and circles, yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and many of them. I mean, in the East, if we're talking about, you know, the Far East and things like Buddhism and even, you know, sannyasins of Advaita and, you know, Hindu, but also in the Christian tradition, you know, the real, you know, this idea that, you know, you'd go forth into the wilderness and, you know, confront your demons and that was how and not say that that isn't some part of it in some cases. But anyway, the point was it was going to be not the ability to actually have a living, loving partnership with another human being in a romantic sense was going to be mutually
and actually
exclusive.
It turned out that it was that very thing of the romantic relationship, and I think both of us would agree with this, that actually propelled and deepened and actually was the, not just
in spite of, but actually played an instrumental part in it.
In the
ongoing awakening.
Yeah, and so we circle back to what it is to consciously relate and actually support each other in awakening.
So what is it that we've done and are doing? you know, what is it, you know, because we are deeply loving and deeply committed to each other and to each other's growth, fulfillment, integrity.
Yeah, and happiness.
Happiness, exactly.
For well-being. Me, when one is orientated to those things and to, above all of those things, to truth.
Yeah.
There is a recognition that whatever you're going through, that's the most important thing.
You said something the other day, we were talking about, we had a good long discussion, we touched on it in the podcast last week, about one's values stack, you know, the values hierarchy and figuring out what they are, what one's values are, because we have them whether we consciously have identified them or not. And I would make the case that if we haven't consciously identified or at least articulated somewhat what our kind of values are and what those priorities in life are, then we're acting unconsciously from them and it can be conflicts.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were talking about what's at the very top of this stack then. And you know, I was making the case for truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, capital T truth, which is in the sense the transcendent truth. It's the principle of truth. Always the principle of truth, not some final static state of truth, but the principle. So that was interesting. And then you would talk, and also right up there was love. Yeah. You know, love as a driving North Star.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could make the case that love and truth are synonymous.
We have had those kind of conversations. Yeah,
but also I at the same time I don't want to necessarily be too reductive about those kind of ideas, that much like the idea of Satchitananda, which is, you know, the let's say the nature of reality is said to be Satchitananda, you know, being consciousness bliss or truth consciousness, bliss, something. It's kind of Trinitarian, like you can't reduce it further than that because these are aspects of the truth that can't be reduced to one.
Yeah, in the same way you can't reduce
of the reality.
Experiencer, the experiencing, and the experienced.
Yeah, well, yes, right. Yeah, there's a kind of an irreducible, well, the transcendent is itself beyond such notions, mm-hmm. right? I guess my point was that coming into a relationship, the driving force was love.
Yeah,
truth was my driving force in life, but you know, love was definitely a huge part of how I would lean into that somehow. I remember early on in our relationship, we'd been together just months, but there was already such love. And I had read something like The Road Less Traveled, mm-hmm. which was a psychology book or a book about case studies in psychology. And I don't think I even finished the book, but it's quite a famous book. But one of the ideas in there was about love, and love not just as this feeling, but love as the action that you take. And it really fed into this theme that we've had in our relationship, which was double down or walk away,
yes.
which was more of a recognition of the dynamics of relationships, particularly in the early stages of relationships where you don't mm-hmm. really know.
I would argue throughout the relationship has been and continues to be a massive theme of our relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, invariably now, blessed be, it's double down.
Yeah.
But the point is when you hit an issue, a conflict,
a miscommunication that leads to hurt,
misunderstanding. And often these come through, life is change. Some are unarticulated and unconscious change needs to be caught up on. And that might lead to a little bit of some conflict. You know, early on in a relationship, that can be, we're arguing, let's say, or something's happened. The argument's coming up. Some misunderstanding, some disagreement that we have. You know, if you're early on in a relationship, you might say, oh, that means that this thing isn't working and isn't supposed to.
It's insurmountable.
Insurmountable. Yeah. It's a sign that I'm supposed to go off and find someone who's more suited to me. It's kind of the nature of the game, isn't it? But what we'd learned, both of us, is the doubling down. I was saying that the thing in that, in the idea that arose in that book for me, just one thought that resonated was, that's what you do with love. If there's love and you're acting from love, you don't really give up on it.
No, you're willing to go through.
You're willing to go, what's it going to take for us to get through this?
Yeah, you're willing to actually go into the uncomfortableness and the misunderstanding and the mess because there is love beyond that and you recognize that. It's all held within the deeper ground of love. And so you're not avoidant of walking through those misunderstandings because you understand that in walking through those misunderstandings, what you come to is deeper understanding, deeper connection, and deeper love.
And the action of love is that as well. It's actually giving a damn about the other.
Yeah.
And what the other, we talked about this once before, and I don't think you necessarily heard the phrase before, sacrificial love.
Mm.
And what that means, as I understand it, is this that if you want to act in love towards the other, in some senses that often calls you to sacrifice some part of yourself for the love and for the other. Granted, that thing that you need to sacrifice is often something egoic or something.
Yeah. A position you've taken.
Yeah, exactly.
A rightness, a sense of I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Of knowing. There's often the egoic position is that you know, you're certain of something. You're certain of what the other person's experience is as well.
Needing to be right, you know. I think, what was that phrase? You know, you would you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Pick one, you know. And so that willing to sort of sacrifice one's rightness.
Yeah.
One's surety or one's position, you know.
Yeah. For love, for truth.
For love. For the other as well. Yeah. And like, because love, true love, agape, you know, is what we're kind of, that kind of love is truly for this, what I came into in my relationship with you. It was the first time I'd come into a relationship in my life where that insight had popped up or been revealed to me, was that what's your well-being
exactly
here? You know,
how can I seek the relationship itself.
Well, sometimes exactly, like if I can't be the thing that, you know, is promoting your happiness, then it's not gonna, I'm not gonna be, you know, it's not gonna work. So that's one thing, that idea of looking, you know, in these places often of subtle conflict, mm-hmm. which you bump into in a
inevitably. It's unavoidable.
As change happens, you know, the adjustments need to happen. Because how do you come at that? Is it held in love? Is it actioned through love?
Yeah.
Is the idea that love doesn't give up?
Yeah.
Really love doesn't give up.
The compassion and love towards the other that also includes yourself. It's both. It's like the love that is for oneself is equal to the love that is for the other as well. And so in that, it's looking at the whole picture rather than just what can I get out of this? What do I want? What's best for me? It's not just in that manner. It's looking at the relationship as me, Imogen, the individual, you, Martin, the individual, and us collectively as the relationship.
That, that idea that talking about, you know, sacrificial love, and so there's a bit of a pathological thing that can happen that is in the guise of, let's say, sacrificial love. Where, and this is life, and actually I would say that so much of what I've learned in this, in our relationship, is so much about how we relate to life and being itself. Yeah. It's such a powerful mirror of the sort of dynamics of relating with other generally.
Yeah.
And one of them was that,
and relationships are a spotlight of that mirror, yeah, I would say.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So one of the ideas that has become apparent is that if you are in a relationship, but if you're, and you have this idea that loving the other requires you to always be the one who sacrifices for the other at your own expense, then much as that seems like a nice, you know, and wonderful, caring, giving, sharing,
altruistic
way, you can end up feeling resentful.
Yeah.
Or you can end up feeling just broken by that. And also that, how can I put this? That dynamic isn't healthy. Gabor Mate talks a lot about this, about how, you know, those who give mm-hmm. and never account for themselves in that giving end up getting sick or end up getting, you know, he connects it to real disease in the body and as well as in the mind. So the learning that in relationship, you have to Well, it's like that. Love your neighbor or love your partner as yourself, but it doesn't exclude yourself. You don't, it's not love your neighbor or love your partner at all expense, keep, you know, loving them and forget about yourself. You have to, it's the usness of the relationship that's important too. It's like my needs, your needs, our needs. And the need of the relationship to have a certain kind of like an energetic equity to it somehow.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do sacrifice, like I'm gonna not do that so that you can have that and you do that the other way around, but as a rule.
Yeah, but that's sort of done consciously, because for me, where there is conflict between these three elements, let's say the me, the you, and the us, what is required is more clarity. Mm-hmm. When there is more clarity, it's not a conflict. It's a conscious recognition of, right now your need is greater than mine, so I'm going to step back from this. And it's not done in resentment. It's not done in unconsciousness. It's not done in a way that is harmful to you, because through that clarity, it's not harmful. It's love. In that clarity, there's where the love can shine.
Yeah, I think I'm of the opinion, in a sense, that when you do get into a conscious relationship, a truly conscious relationship, that becomes a mirror to each of us, right? Yeah. We're bouncing back or constantly like we're constantly seeing ourselves in how the other is being and responding to us. That's a sort of a constant.
And that can be very intense to have that mirror and to consciously be aware that that is what's going on.
Yeah.
It can be very, very intense.
That's it. And sort of leaning into that, but then the relationship becomes its own entity in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I really think there's a deeper cosmic principle at play here. And this is why the binary, the relationship between two, you know, loving romantic individuals, let's say, in that sense, becomes, and actually it can happen in other ways. Friendship can be tremendous, and family too.
Yeah, even sort of teacher student, you know, those kind of relationships.
So conscious relating is a really important thing. But when you're both in it for the truth, the love, and the growth, and are willing to have yourself mirrored back to you, and in a trusting, loving way, that you know that the other one isn't just point scoring, although that can happen from time to time, but ultimately when you stay within that,
it's coming from a place of love, and you trust that it's coming from a place of love in them as well. And so then the guard can be let down of being seen, you know, like I think a lot of times in relationships, certainly early on, there's a fear of being truly seen in all of your ugliness. It's all, everyone wants to be seen in all their perfection and all their sort of good qualities. But there's relationships, you can't keep that mask for very long in relationships. And so relationships, I think, require us to be fully unmasked, fully seen by the other.
Yeah.
And
as soon as possible, because we're all, as you say, you know, you go out, you're having your first date or something, you're having dinner or whatever together, and you know, if you're fronting the whole time, and we do that to some extent, you know, we're like, want to put our best foot forward. But if you're genuinely pretending, and this is why people who are kind of more inclined to, let's say, present themselves as a persona rather than really get to the authentic nature of themselves and put that out, like the closing that gap between the authentic being and the persona, whether those two are more or less, you know, the same thing. Yeah, as you say, you won't be able to, in a relationship, it's so intense, you won't be able to hold that mask up for long. So sooner the better that you know that each gets to the authentic nature of the other, the authentic. Yeah.
When I came to the realization that I loved you even in your worst, That's really powerful. And the recognition that too. You love yeah. me at even my worst is like, at that point, it's like, I might not like your behavior. Uh-huh. I might not like you right now, but I love you regardless.
Yeah.
I love you even in this set of behaviors that I don't like. The love for you far outweighs that.
Well, there's a great line. I believe all of the answers to all the questions are in movies. That's my, I hold that. And that's why I want you to watch more movies. I've watched a lot more movies than you have because yeah, I go, hey, in this movie they said this. And you're like, I didn't see that. Oh God, all these references are yeah, wasted on you.
Yeah, woefully undereducated in terms but there's a, there's a movie, movies and quotes. Yeah,
the movie Meet Joe Black.
I remember that movie.
Right, sweet movie. And one of the characters in there is Quince, and he's a bit of a, you know, he's sweet. He's a sweet guy, and he's married to the daughter of Anthony Hopkins's main character. And he's kind of sweet, and he's a bit gormless, you know, he's not slick in any way. And he does something wrong, and he's talking to Brad Pitt's character. And about telling the truth in relationships. Mm. And he says, you know, and Brad Pitt's saying, well, how's your relationship working out then? Why are you? He said, because I'm free. Because I've, she know, he goes, how? And he goes, because she knows the worst thing about me.
Yeah.
And she still loves me. And it just frees
that's
you.
That's amazing.
And that's the gift of it. It's, I thought that was really, really quite touching. And so you can't hide.
No. And you don't need to.
And you
as
don't
well.
Need to, but you have to get vulnerable in that case, right? Because there's always, you know, revealing ourselves, revealing our inner selves, being in relation that you can't hide, especially when you're kind of sensitive. You know, we're both sort of attuned. We're both sensitive to hiddenness and to energetic.
Yeah, like we can walk, either of us can walk into the room and the other one's sitting in the room and there's a sense of
yeah
where someone's at. And that can be challenging, particularly when someone's like one of us is not quite ready to
yeah
bring that to the surface. But it's also really wonderful to be that sensitive to another.
Yeah. I think it's, so I was going to say earlier that I think this points to something actually much deeper about how we relate to the other. So on a consciousness level, on the level of coming into being as in, you know, let's say consciousness, you singular being, there's no other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately there is no other. But then we have this, the manifestation of others.
Yeah.
In, you know,
waves in the ocean.
Waves in the ocean. Then have to relate to each other. So how do we relate? You know, and we see in the world, we see conflict because mm-hmm. there's a breakdown of relating. And so how do you come into relation? And what's the effective way in which we can meet? What are the dynamics of meeting the other mm-hmm. in harmony and mutual mutual support?
I think one of the big ones for me, at least, is to meet afresh.
Right.
I was contemplating this earlier today, mm. actually, I was writing about it, how the Imogen that sits here now is not the same Imogen that sat here an hour ago, is not the same Imogen that sat here right. a week ago, a month ago, a year ago, 10 years ago. And I think that's also been a big theme in our relationship that has been such a saving grace for yeah. both of us, that we're not requiring the other one or ourselves to hold fast to an old image of the other or ourselves.
Yeah.
That I feel every moment you are meeting me and I am meeting you. Ideally, sometimes that is less than perfect. You know, sometimes there's less of that. But for the most part, for the vast majority, I would say vast majority. I feel like you and I are not trying to hold on to a yesterday version of each other.
You call it like a ghost of the other. You said the other day, which I really liked.
Yeah, and it's so what you are is you are meeting that person in this moment exactly as they are. And the freedom for them to be exactly as they are and for you to be exactly
you
as
have
well.
No, and I love this, and likewise, no expectation or requirement that you be anything that you're absolutely not.
Yeah.
I want you to be your where you are, what you are, who and how you are, as is authentic and true and best case for you. What is that?
Yeah.
And I don't want to go, hey, you said that, I need you to be this kind of person. It's like...
And also the relationship of like, that the relationship has to look a certain way. Every, you know, in terms of, I look at our relationship, you know, it's funny we're having this conversation. It's 19 years we've been together in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And you look back and... In some ways, we're exactly the same in terms of, I don't know how to, the love is, you know.
Well, I think it's interesting. So early on in our relationship, this came up. Like I'm changeable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll have, you know, enthusiasms and interests and habits and things like that, and I'm much more ebb and flow, and I'm changeable. Yeah. I'll cycle around different things. I'm not constant.
Yeah.
The obvious part, the outer part of me, isn't so constant. It cycles. Yeah.
Your
around.
Personality is much more
changeable.
Influx. Yeah.
Influx. Yeah.
Whereas I'm sort of.
You're much more steady.
Yeah. Exactly.
When we were first in relation, I think it threw you. How changeable
terrifying.
I was, how you would like,
it made
you
me
were
feel
in,
so unsafe.
Right.
I needed security and safety mainly because of my own traumas and childhood experiences.
And so I would really change. One day I'd be like into something, whatever that was. And then the next day I'd go, I'm not, and you'd go, are you doing, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not into, and you'd be like,
it's like whiplash.
And like, yeah, because you go like that. But what was interesting was that happened. But I was still here. That was the thing. Yeah. And I think what that did, by having this sort of outer changing, fluxing, you know, personality, let's say,
mm-hmm.
You couldn't get hooked on the more superficial aspects of me, let's say. And what it came to after a few of these is I could see that you were tuning into the deeper part of me that was constant, because there is a constant. There's something deeper. There's something that
Your essence, your fragrance, your way of relating to the world and who you are in that had to become known, because I couldn't hold on to anything else. I mean, really, it was. I remember those first few months was quite an education for me in what it was to live with someone so rapidly changeable. I had to face a lot of my own personal fears around that.
Yeah. But then I think that's it, as I say, it shows and this is the cosmic thing, you know, change is constant on the surface. Sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's more rapid and all this, but it's like, what's the deeper ground? And I think that was really beautiful, that through that experience, both of us were coming to, well, I'm not hooked on you, Imogen, as who you were back then, whatever, you know, whatever I'd want to define that as, because she's gone. But the essence of you is, and who and what you are. That there are deeper essence.
And so that's what I was saying, you know, 19 years, I look back and the Imogen and Martin of 19 years ago, it doesn't exist. And yet there is an essence there very much does, that's carried through as underlying all of this. But I even just looking at us a year ago, for instance, so much has changed, and that continues, in my experience, to get faster. Those changes get faster and faster as you're not holding on to any sort of sense of it can't change.
You just can't get hooked on superficialities. And to be honest, a lot of what we see as superficialities. And so I think that's so that there's what's part of our success is a deeper appreciation of what is essential.
Yeah.
What the essence of the other is. And seeking the ultimate well-being of the other over some sort of egoic need to get something from the other. Yeah. You know.
As you're speaking there, what was coming up for me was I feel truly seen. Like, and I don't mean that in a superficial way. I mean that in the deepest possible sense of it. Is like, I feel so incredibly seen by you. And that is so healing. It's so freeing and liberating to be seen and to see another.
Yeah.
I think that's, to me, one of the most beautiful things.
Now, we've definitely had... So this has been a growth of understanding, of recognition, and change.
Mm-hmm.
Each of us has changed so much and grown so much.
And continues to.
So, you know, if we were holding on to some iteration of the other, forget about it. We would have gone, oh, that's you're not the person I married.
No, you're not.
No, nor are you. Yeah, exactly.
No way. No. But yes as well.
But yes. But something that comes to mind was a point at which where there was an almost break point for us, and it was just after I had my shift, just after I awakened, and we prior to it had set off mutually in a direction together, and then, you know, a big shift happened and all bets were off for me and Mimi. As I was
still moving in that direction, whereas you...
I had to move in a different direction. And there was no way that I could not, and no way that you could, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So for a while there, for a couple of months, we were...
Yep.
That was the longest we've been apart, actually, in all these 19 years. I think it was a couple of months.
Yeah, it was.
And not only were we living apart, but it was intractable.
We didn't see a way that it was going to come back together.
Not that we wanted to be apart, but we had to be, and didn't know whether this was it for us, because we couldn't see a clear way. Not that the love hadn't gone,
no,
and the desire to be together, but you know, and that was so this I mentioned this because it was such an interesting time.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't be anywhere other than I was, and nor could you.
Yeah.
And I remember being, so we would get on the phone together or whatever, and we'd talk, and we'd end up arguing.
Yeah.
Because we were just desperately struggling to solve this problem of being apart, and nothing could, and we'd end up getting frustrated and arguing with each other. And then I remember at some point in my heart, it was like, this is out of my control entirely. I love you. I want to be with you wherever that might be. But this is how it is right now. And I had to actually let go of you.
Yeah.
Let go of the idea that I had any control over the fact whether we were together or not. And that was really hard. But I remember the moment I let go of that and realized it's not in my hands. It's in the hands of grace.
And you were kind of in that. That became clear to you much earlier than it became clear to me, I think, in that period of time. Right. Because you had a shift of perspective, and you did have a clearer recognition of the nature of reality.
Right.
I think that came to you much quicker than it came to me. And actually, that was a source of frustration for me.
Right.
It was a source of, like, I saw you letting go, and I felt like I was losing you.
Yeah. When I was realizing that it's actually out of our hands, this isn't. Yeah. And that was the, you, carry on, please.
Whereas I didn't, because I hadn't had that deep recognition. And it's one thing to have that recognition intellectually. It's entirely a different thing to have it experientially. And you had had it experientially. Mm. And I hadn't yet fully. Yeah. I mean, I'd had a very large taste of that, but I wasn't living from that recognition. So that period of time was very, very painful for me because I felt like I was being ripped apart.
Yeah.
My heart was being ripped apart. And what was actually being ripped apart was my false sense of attachment.
And control.
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
Very much both.
Yeah.
And was probably very pivotal. Yeah, I could probably say it was very yeah. pivotal for me personally. And that attachment is funny. I love being with you. I love our life together. That's my preference.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
But that attachment has never returned in the same manner.
So that's exactly what I'm pointing to. That, like, in some ways, the path of our relationship, you know, we got absolutely entangled in the best possible way very early on for a very long time. But there are certain key points at which the ability of the relationship or the characteristic of the relationship going forward was actually us sort of disconnecting a little bit from each other, more separating from each other in energetically in order that we can be so fully together.
Yeah, it was like the binds, the structures and the binds that were false needed to be liberated in order for that free flow.
Yeah.
To bring us together. It's like you're not coming together because there's tight ties between us. You're coming together because there's love.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a really big one of that you're right. We've never since then we came back together within a couple of months. We were living back together and we've been tight as we ever were ever since. But there's something about the knowledge that dawned at that point that whether we're, and this is where it gets interesting, is that it's out of our hands whether we're together. It's actually a gift that we're together.
Yeah, exactly.
And a gift that there's so much love between us. And there's a real gift that we're, you know, living our lives entangled but not entangled at the same time, sort of completely together at the same time, completely each in our own sovereign,
in our power, sat light into and our
power. Yeah.
And actually, as you're mentioning this, it brings up, you know, early doors where we began to give transmissions. We were doing it under a collective called End of Seeking. It's actually where this podcast name is the leftover of that, and actually we may change that at some point because it is a leftover of that. Yeah. But it's a collective space for us.
Yes.
So we had a website, endofseeking.com.
Yeah, that's how we were both making offering our...
We didn't have individual offerings. And so this was another turning point, I think, in our relationship, actually, that speaks to what you were just talking. A few years ago,
yeah.
So this was back in 2018. We would collectively...
Yeah, we collectively offer. So what was offered and written on the website, how, you know, a description of what we were doing and what was going on was a sort of a mutual thing. But actually you were, me too, but you were like, there were things I would say here that aren't getting said because there are things that...
Yeah, but because of my particular history of my particular upbringing and the way that I interacted with life at that point, I had trouble standing in my own authority and my light still.
Yeah.
I was struggling with that on a personal level. And by being sort of coupled with you, who's naturally, your voice is quite, is that of more of an authority? Is that, you know, like that's just your personality. You have that sort of tendency in you. I found that I was struggling to sink into my own light in a sovereign sense. And so actually we ended up separating our work out at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the best possible thing.
It was. You went off and really became and started Beyond Imogen,
yeah,
which was just your voice, yeah, your way. I mean, I'd argue it probably took you a while to figure out what to even, you know, and figure out what that was in its own terms.
I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, but it gave you complete freedom then to be, yeah, able to go your own way and say what you want to say. Yeah. That might not be, you know, because we have a very common understanding and recognition, yeah, of the nature of reality, but it is expressed quite differently.
It is. And actually, this podcast is the first time we've come back together, actually.
Yes.
Like, so we started this podcast in earnest the beginning of this year, 2022. Yeah. And...
3.
Yes. I'm a year behind, so 2023. But this is the first time since we separated our websites. I think that was back in 2019 we separated our websites.
Yeah.
This is the first... Maybe it was 2020. Anyway, my sense of time is notoriously bad, so forgive me.
It was before 2020.
So this is the first time you and I have come back together to in do terms something of together, working yeah. together. And I think the difference is that I, since that point, have really sunken into and trusted my own voice, my own light, my own sense of what I have to offer and what I have to share. And that's been a really wonderful thing.
So here's, you know, so there's the point of what it is then to relate. If I had been like, you know, so much of these problems in relationships come down to sort of egoic attachments.
Yeah.
If I'd been like, no, you can't leave me, or the other way around, you can't leave me, whatever. You know, if you're needing the other to sort of bolster you, bolster an insecurity or provide happiness.
Mm-hmm.
As not to say that I don't, you know, being with you is
yes,
fills me with joy.
Yeah.
And...
But it's not to serve a lack. It's not to serve a space of lack that you need that. It's not like a cup that's empty that needs filling.
Or it's at the cost of you. Oh, yeah. You can't do that. You have to stay out, no matter how you want to change and be. Mm-hmm. You have to stay you are just to make me happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Or vice versa. And those are the things in the relationship. You know, are you... and it's fear-based, right? And, you know, and the ego desperately wants continuity, consistency, unchanging, if you identify, or that safety.
Certainty.
And doesn't want, like, change necessarily. So, you know, you going and doing that, it actually liberated me as well, because it's interesting, I went off and sort of changed my own, you know, relationship to my work. So this idea of being, of living parallel, at the same time really in unity and communion, but totally. Never losing one's, not losing one's sovereignty,
one's
right?
One's own light. Fragrance of, yeah, you know, like, so in sort of spiritual ideas of awakening, there can be a subtle sense of vanilla-ness of experience. And what I mean by that is that you're detached from life, you're the sort of the the personal is too much wrapped up in the ego. So if you express preferences or differences, that's the ego.
Right.
But to me, and so there's this sense of like those that are awake don't have differences, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, actually, it's exactly the opposite. Is like, what happens is our each individual unique fragrance embodiment, light in human form, has its own fragrance, has its own style, has its own personality. And there's a real honoring of that. Like, we are not in any way wanting that not to be.
Right.
So, a lot of double negatives there, sorry.
No, that's correct. You know, part of the fear of another changing in a relationship is the fear that you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was because it's come up in relationship in many times, you know, in smaller and larger ways. But that particular time, it was so clear that I could lose you.
Yeah.
And you could lose me. We could absolutely, you know, if life had it in for us to not come back together, we wouldn't have come back together. And it was that real insight, that it was a very painful insight in some senses to go, I have no control over whether we're together. I want to be with you. You want to be with me. That's true. But circumstances can show up sometimes that you go, well, we can't be. No matter how much you want it. What a life lesson to realize, we don't always get what we want. And no matter, in any sense of control is
futile.
And yet there we were. You come back together and, you know, more stronger, more deeply than ever before, arguably. But it's not on the basis of control.
No.
It's on the basis of a gift.
Yes.
And so, this, you know, even though my commitment to you is full, I also know that it's grace. It's life can do something and make it impossible.
Yeah.
And so again, it points to this deeper sense of life being a gift and you know, cherishing the gifts that are given. I wanted to touch on one thing, and it seems as in terms of while we're on the subject as we are of what it is to what's important in relating with a partner. You know, love is a huge part of it. Truth is a huge part of it. Mm-hmm.
Say those difficult things that you don't want to say.
Yeah, but just living in truth and being honest with yourself and with the other.
Yeah.
Without fear of, or even with fear of losing or something, or being seen a particular way. Truth is so important.
But it's a real risk. It's a real risk. Yeah. Love is a real risk that has such a reward. But it takes a lot of courage, actually, to live in that truth, that openness, that vulnerability, that fear of loss, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Or if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to... And that a lot of relationships start on the wrong foot that way. We're talking about, you know, you're kind of showing, oh, I'm really into... I'm into this. Oh, I'm into that too. You know, it's like, no, don't lie. Just be straight. You know, be straight about who you are. And if the person you're with is resonating with the truth of who you are, great. But if you're living a lie, you've got to maintain that lie. So truth is absolutely essential. But no, what I was going to say is that one thing that's really important that's probably overlooked in terms of what's important, I think, in a healthy and fulfilling and supportive relationship is respect.
Yeah.
Like, I really, you know, I love you so much. And I like you, don't get me wrong. And that's another thing as well. It helps. Well, you know, we can love people we don't particularly like. So that's true. I kind of like you. And we met at work and we worked together for like about a month, day in, day out. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, romantically pursuing you for, you know, I liked you. And, you know, sure, there was mutual attraction there, I think, at the quite early on. But there's no... Yeah. it was on the basis, actually, we kind of established we liked each other. We're friends.
Yeah. But, you're my best friend.
Yeah, exactly. But this kind of sense of respect that, I know it seems like a really kind of stiff thing to sort of mention between, you know, romantic partners, but having like a real respect for the other, and respectful of who and what you are, and is also really important.
And also respecting, so that's brought up something for me is like, respecting the other, even when you don't agree or don't understand their way of doing something. But the respect is the recognition that they're doing what is right for them.
Yeah.
Now, if it has an impact on you, that needs to be negotiated. Yeah,
respecting your choices for your life and your way of being.
To really honor that actually their way of moving in life. Mm. Is not necessarily your way, but having a deep mutual respect for each other in the way that we have to, because it's not a choice. You don't move in life as a choice necessarily, although some things are on the surface level choices. But it's like your nature, your sense of moving left, not right, is often part of your, if it's not conditioned by the ego, it's often part of your essence.
Yeah. Well, I see. So I'm really grateful for our relationship, and I'm really grateful for the good fortune that, by some blessing, we are relating in a healthy and mutually supportive and loving way. I love that. I aim for it, and so do you.
Yeah.
But, you know, our capacity to do so is also, you know, in some sense, not always our choice.
Yeah.
But what comes to mind is some unhealthy ways of approaching relating. And I when I see these relationships, I'm like, oh God, that is just not going to stand you in good stead. And I've had some of my own, you know, where they didn't work, you know, and there were fundamental flaws in relating on my part,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do with my own seeking of my own needs, which weren't altogether, you know, healthy or mutually supportive. So, you know, you got to do your own work. If you want to be want to be in a healthy relationship, you've got to do your work to bring the best version of yourself to the relationship, the most truthful,
1,000%
the most loving,
agree.
Right? You have to, you know, if there's a problem in a relationship, you know, okay.
Yeah, you can't look to just blame the other.
No.
That doesn't work out very well in a relationship long term.
No, exactly.
You have to be willing to take a cold, hard look at your own part in everything.
And that's where trust in the other is so important as well, to know that as you're doing that work for yourself, that they're doing their work, but also that they're sympathetic and forgiving of the fact that you're, you know,
doing your best
and it's ugly sometimes, and
it's that working on good faith. It's to constantly assume the good faith of the other in this until they show you differently.
And here's the thing, we have our rows, and we bounce around for a bit, and sometimes it can get a bit hot, and you know, when we're at each other, because there's something going on that, you know, maybe we're tired actually, or maybe, you know, some changes are occurring that haven't been fully integrated, and you know, each of us still has our own reactivities embodied, and that's the beauty of the relationship, so they do get exposed, and in good faith and in love and in awareness and compassion, you know, that there's the opportunity then that mirror just showed me something, and I might not like it at first.
And I might even sit there and reject it at first because it's too painful for me to touch on for myself. But that doesn't wash. That doesn't long term.
No.
That is not sustainable.
Yeah.
You relationships in this manner absolutely require you to be honest with yourself, because there's no way of hiding.
No. Well, you know, I'm of the opinion that life itself is orchestrating and situations and whatnot, to continue to expose where work in our own consciousness and our own embodiment needs to be addressed and vision. You know,
it's like literally little gifts, little flags planted in the sand to show you where there is attention needed.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to just cycle slightly back to the conversation a little bit earlier of when we get into arguments. Mm-hmm. Something that I've noticed is when we are apart, whether it's for a few moments, a few hours, a few days, a few weeks, what I've noticed in both of us is because we are so committed to truth, to our continued spiritual growth, let's say, there's such a rapid, fast-paced, changing evolution of
each
of us, what I would call the embodiment, this Imogen-ness, this Martin-ness. There's such a rapid change, and neither of us are in resistance to that. So it's we're constantly evolving, constantly
changing.
There's
always new insights day in, day out.
Hours to hours, moment to moment. And so when we separate, whether that's even, like I think of it, even just I've gone through a session with someone and some insight, that session has provided so insight to me just as much as the person I'm sat with. And there's been an evolution, or you've been doing something that has been, you know, really evocative to you and has put you in, has given an insight that has shifted something for you. So that can happen with us, and that can happen very rapidly, or equally if we literally spend a few days apart, say I've gone away or you've gone away, and we come back together. What I've noticed in our relationship is, and this has happened time and time again over the years, is when we come back together, whether it's been a short time or a longer time, there's a recalibration period that always occurs. And I think you and I have probably, we're so used to this that I don't think we even make a note of it anymore. I think it just happens naturally. But I want to bring it into the podcast because I think it might be helpful for people to look at their own ways of relating, not just in romantic relationships, but all relationships. When you have spent time apart from someone and you've changed, whether you're aware of that change or not, and they've changed, whether you're aware of that change or not, when you come back together, the recalibration of needing to see where one is at. And it's not just a conceptual thing, it's an energetic thing. It's like I really feel like we're needing to match the vibration of each other again, of see that, feel that, experience that. And that's on all levels of existence, I would say. And I've seen that process, and the longer we spend apart, often it's not one-to-one correlation here, but often it takes longer for that recalibration process to happen.
Well, it's because we're so, I think we're really deeply attuned. Yeah. Like really, you know, when we're, because we do, you know, spend a lot of time together, and we have our different lives going on about the place, but we are very deeply in communion with each other.
Yeah.
Energetically, so we notice when things are shifting and changing.
We're
staying up to date with that, staying energetically attuned.
Yeah,
to that.
It's like I always think like when, like so we rarely spend a lot of time apart. We spend most of our days, 7 days a week together, in the same vicinity, let's say the same house. But there have been times where we've spent time apart. I think back to the time we were house sitting, we spent a month apart. And it was quite challenging to come back together.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about
to meet each other. Like so much had happened.
For each of us.
Yeah, who I was, who you were.
Yeah, we change a lot. Yeah. Interestingly, you're right. You know, there's a lot of micro changes going on all the time. Insights. You know, there does seem to be this deepening and growth. But also about how, you know, there's definitely something about moving together, like independently, but also as in communion, let's say, or at least in harmony.
Yeah.
And that there's a sort of a necessity for an energetic transparency, let's say,
mm-hmm.
around that. You know, not much goes by either of us when if each of us has, you know, something happening within themselves, that some processing that's occurring, or something that's happening that is felt.
And it can take time to update your view of the other. And we were talking earlier in the conversation about being fresh, being, you know, constantly relating to the other in this moment.
No, not.
But sometimes it can take you a minute to see where there are leftover vestiges of relating to someone, even as they were 5 minutes ago.
I think, you know, you're right. I think what we find as well, sometimes, say, we'll bump into something, we might be a little bit off with each other or something. For me, I think, maybe you'd agree with this, it's that we haven't caught up.
Yeah,
that we haven't communicated as deeply.
Exactly.
In an articulated fashion.
Yeah.
That as we've need to. And every once in a while, you know, you're busy, I'm busy, something's happening, we're either apart from each other or like there's so much going on that we as a couple don't sort of sit down with each other and listen and speak and go really deeply into get right on the same page. What's on your mind? What's in your heart? What's going on for you? What insight, you know, what's going on? And often we'll sit, like we'll have an afternoon where we'll just
put everything aside and
talk.
You know,
but it might start off a little with a little friction, actually.
But
that's a sign that we need to sit down, we need to just talk.
We need to reconnect.
Reconnect.
And it's not that we're ever fully, I don't feel ever fully disconnected, but it's just, again, that recalibration. It's like you can just be slightly off.
Yeah.
It's slightly not getting the whole picture of something. Yeah. And so, it to prioritize that when needed, that when that reconnection, when that sort of really meeting each other in a more full way, not just a day-to-day way, but in a really intentional and deep way. If that sits at the heart of your relationship, there tends to not be conflicts, there tends to not be misunderstandings, and there from those misunderstandings hurt that's caused. When we prioritize that, it even though it might start out a bit clunky, It leads us to a way of easeful relating on the relative sense of it, on the practical sense of it, and who's doing the washing up and who's doing, you know, like really, you know, mundane ways of moving in life becomes much smoother, much easier, much more in alignment with each other, much more on the same page, as you said.
Yeah.
And it starts from that. It starts from the deep listening and hearing and meeting of that person, and holding space for that.
Yeah.
Putting that as a very high value in the relationship.
I just think it's such a powerful, almost. What word could I use here? It's like a powerful mechanism. And this is why I appreciate someone like Cynthia Bourgeau, who talks about this kind of thing. Cynthia Bourgeau is a Christian contemplative writer and whatnot. And she's written some really beautiful books. She wrote a really interesting book about Mary Magdalene. A very interesting take on Mary's relationship with Jesus, and which was a very unorthodox take on it, that they were in this, what she would call this sort of conscious relating, whether they were romantically entwined or not, that actually doesn't really matter. But there was this she uses this as the model of two, you know, spiritually awakened and evolved beings.
It's the mystic union.
Mystic union, relating in a very particular conscious way. And it serves both with such power, to be that mirror in the and to be mirrored and to mirror, and for this to be happening. And it's like we've talked about this before. This has come up in our relationship. Say one of us is going through something, and let's say in sort of the work of one-on-one sessions, for example, you're meeting someone in a session, and really the work there of being, you know, an awakened presence for the other and the space for the other to mirror faithfully back at them what mm-hmm. what's going on for them and unpack their reality and their truth in the spirit of satsang and the spirit of self-inquiry, super powerful. And so, but when you're doing it like in that mode, you're an empty vessel. You're a completely empty space for them to do the work and guiding and mirroring back for them.
Yeah, you're holding them, and you're also providing an anchor point, a grounding.
Right.
In beingness rather than in the person.
So here's the thing. When you and I are doing that, we are each ourselves are offering, let's say, that space of being, that space of being. But also, if you're presenting something that you're dealing or struggling with or just exploring, some energetic exploration that might be activating certain parts of me.
So you're not just an empty vessel at that point.
Neither of us are empty vessel. Yeah. And the way I look at it, you know, well, that's in some sense you could say, well, that wouldn't it be nice to one could be a perfect, you know, mirror or perfect space for the other. But actually that we're both doing it at the same time, both processing, looking, inquiring, dealing, energetically holding both of us, and at the same time maybe some you know reaction and action arising within us. I look at it as a high altitude training.
Oh my God,
because if you can maintain, let's say, the presence, awareness, clarity, you know, and energetic space both at the same time while both reacting
for
and acting
other and
for
yourself.
The other and yourself, that's it's like yeah high altitude
it's,
training
it's alchemy it's real alchemy
yeah
to and it's so delicate and so such a delicate dance. I mean the amount of times where we failed at that in some sense it wasn't a failure, but in some sense one hasn't been able to hold that space, and it is it's a really it's very, very fiery aliveness.
But
to,
the work
to hold that.
That gets done within this context, this is why I think it's an accelerant. I think the relationship, now we're talking about subtler and subtler aspects that get dealt with and exposed and brought into the light and processed and released. And honestly, it's just been the most powerful spiritual practice is to be in relationship with you.
Yeah, it's uncompromising.
It's an accelerant. It's uncompromising. Yeah. It's always on. It's beautiful.
Yet
awareness,
it's held.
Awareness, awareness.
Yet it's held. It's and held. This is the X factor of all of this.
Yeah.
It's held with such deep love and trust and respect.
Yeah.
And that is
truth.
Yeah, that's the real
power.
Profound power of that is it's not just working through this for the sake of working through this. It's
ever deepening. It's that we've been talking about this, you know, ecstasis. I think it was ecstasis, ecstasis. This ever deepening. You know, even while in the fullness of awakened being, there's this ever deepening.
Yeah, so the unchanging within the change.
Yeah. So that
and
this
vice versa.
This relationship has facilitated that for each of us, that you know, that facilitating and ever culturing that ever deepening.
You've been my greatest teacher.
Likewise.
I said it in a satsang the other day actually. It's like you and my mother. in a different manner altogether. But yeah, it's like it's those close personal relationships that far from being a hindrance to our spiritual growth are actually the very vehicles by which we, if seen in that manner at least, which can be used as an accelerant to our own, not only awakening to our nature, but the embodiment of that, more importantly, the embodiment of that awakening is through our relating.
Yeah.
We find how we move and act and are in this life.
But it also models, so we're this very particular relationship that we have, this marriage, but this deep friendship that we have, mm-hmm. and this deep mutually respectful and loving, really loving, and also joyful. It's there's so much going on in this relationship for me and you, no doubt.
Yes.
But then this is also the model for relating with friendships, with family, with parents and siblings, and just people. Yeah. How I relate to someone who's
a stranger,
a stranger I meet on a bus or in a shop or mm-hmm. or whatever. You know that the understanding, the deep understanding of human nature, that and what effective and loving relating is, you know, which we get to, let's say, practice and discover, you know, in the most subtle ways. You know, what is it to relate to an other, and what is how to approach that, and how to approach someone else's brokenness or difficulty, and what does that take in us to be able to relate to another who's behaving badly? I behave badly, you behave badly. No, not really, but wouldn't accuse you of that. But the point, do you know what I mean? That seeing where that's coming from, the richness of this one relationship,
mm-hmm.
at all these different levels with all these different aspects and facets, really has taught me so much about what it is to be a human and to be in relation with another. It's really beautiful. It's a real gift. I'm really great. So grateful for
it. Me too.
So grateful for you.
And I you. And grateful that even though life has given me challenges in other relationships, it gave me a real true buddy. That's something that I reflect on frequently. That I'm so utterly grateful for the type of person that life brought my way with you.
Likewise.
Allowing me to be me and you to be you.
I want you to be you. Whatever that might turn out to be, what you are and what you can, you know, blossom into as well, as we all are, you know, continuing to.
It's so beautiful, such a gift to have someone in your life that really wants that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a start.
Yeah, it really does feel like just a start. I mean, a good start.
Yeah.
But there's so much that I feel we've both learned from this relationship and continue to learn.
Well, it's also tricky to articulate it because mm-hmm. we live it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we bumped into enough. And figured out what that, you know, it's on the level of feel and on the level of unarticulated wisdom.
Yeah.
That how relating is successful, let's say. that it's not always easy to be able to pull out, well, it's that and it's that and it's that.
At the start, very start of this podcast, that's where I was going with that. It's like there's certain things in my life that feel like they're such pivotal things for me that I don't know even where to begin in terms of articulating them.
Yeah.
Relationships is one of those things.
Yeah.
Boundaries for me is another one of those things. That there's certain themes that I feel I've had to really live through,
right,
as life, big chunky life lessons.
Yeah.
That it becomes such a big topic with where you've learned so many lessons.
Yeah.
That it is hard to start to articulate.
You can't articulate them yet. They're well, I think that's...
You're living it still.
That is the nature of our learning, isn't it? We do first instinctively, and we're in life, we act out before we can even begin to articulate what we're going to extract as an articulated, formulated lesson. Yeah. Oh, well, this is the principle that demonstrates through the particularities of the way that we've learned that works, that doesn't work.
Like neither of us had, I don't think, any clue of, maybe had some ideas going into this podcast about what we were going to talk about, but really not, I really didn't know what was going to come out of this podcast, what we were going to talk about. There's some general themes that, are very obvious to us. But that's what I think is so powerful about these conversations for us, whether anyone else thinks this or not, but certainly for me, like the power of these kind of podcasts we get to explore this.
Yeah, we get to articulate that which has not been articulated yet,
exactly,
or explore that which hasn't been actually actively looked at. Might have been we're living it out, but then
it's very deeply lived.
Reflecting. Oh, there's my mic stand. Yeah, we're living it out, but we're this opportunity to actually reflect
articulate
on it and actually speak it out
is, I think, fresh for us, new for us. Well, not entirely, because we do this, but certainly in a public manner, let's say.
No, it's beautiful. I really appreciate these conversations that we have, because it gets for us to sort of reflect back on things that we might not necessarily have sort of taken the time to articulate, because we take them for granted, but just that because we're living them, we don't have to name it.
Well, we're doing it, and also we do name it, but real time. We name but not in terms of a whole subject matter, or we name these things real time as they come up, but to have a whole conversation on the general topic of relationships is not
well. I'm sure we'll talk some more about it
this came from a comment someone made, and so appreciate those sort of jumping off points. And if anyone has any jumping off points as it pertains to relationships, obviously generally any questions, but if anyone has anything more specific about relationships, that's helpful jumping off points for us.
Yeah, because I don't even know what we, I don't know what we don't haven't articulated in some sense, right?
That's not clear.
Because this is the satsang thing, right? This, in general, it's all about the question. And I think this is, and I really appreciate this. So appreciate this question, this query. Thank you for that, because it comes from a heartfelt place.
Yeah.
Because it's like the questioner was like, I appreciate the way you relate, and it's really inspiring to him, and that's beautiful. And that's the thing with to be remembered when say we're inviting someone to ask. Like if you have a question or a query that you want to bring forth or us to look at and to question, and it's like that idea that there's two types of questions. There's the information kind of questions that people ask in satsang.
Can you tell me about XYZ?
What do you think? And that's fine as far as it goes, but The ones that have the juice are the ones that are really connected to us. The ones that
are personal, actually. The ones that are relevant to you who is asking the question.
Yeah.
It's not
Not just to fill your mind or to have a theoretical answer.
It's all questions, I believe anyway, are actually based from a particularity. And the thing is, if you're feeling not safe enough to bring up that particularity, you're likely to ask a knowledge question. You're likely to ask a generalization question that says, what about this topic?
Yeah.
But actually, it always comes from a personal query, that there's something you're struggling with, something you're wondering, something you're needing to, wanting to explore, but you're not quite ready to.
You won't maybe have an identified, you know, the
come from a personal place with it.
It's like, what's the real question?
Exactly. And I often find myself wondering that sometimes, where someone is asking a knowledge question of like, what is it you are actually asking here? What do you want to really get to in this in this question that you're asking?
Yeah.
There's often a deeper question.
Yeah. Okay, great. let's wrap it up. Thanks everyone for tuning in. As I got to say, if you like it, please. if you feel like sharing it, please do. And subscribe if you want to know when it comes out. Usually most weeks, but we'll see. Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Bye for now.